Preventing suicide is one of our society's greatest challenges. That's why the Flint Hills Volunteer Center has developed this Suicide Awareness PACT podcast. PACT stands for Prevention, Awareness, Compassion, Training. The Suicide PACT podcast will feature personal stories and professional perspectives. This podcast series is funded in part by the Kansas Health Foundation, AmeriCorps Seniors, and the Greater Manhattan Community Foundation. Our hope is to touch hearts and provide hope amidst despair. Please follow us wherever you get your podcasts and share them with those you know that are seeking help and hope. Our website and contact info is included in the show notes.
Back with another episode of the Suicide Awareness PACT podcast. I'm Dave Lewis, along with co-host Lori Bishop. And this is a podcast series funded in part by the Kansas Health Foundation, AmeriCorps Seniors, and the Greater Manhattan Community Foundation. And Lori, I know that you have been very active in working with military members of our community. And our guest today is from our community, but not necessarily one that you have worked with, like with the Flint Hills Veterans Coalition and some of the other things that you're engaged in.
Yes. And actually, today we're joined by Jordan Hendricks. And ironically, Jordan graduated with my son, Jordan, and they played basketball together in high school. So we kind of got a little connection there. And so Jordan's path has taken a big difference, a big change since high school graduation. And we'll get into that a little bit. But Jordan, thanks for joining us today.
It's truly a joy. Thanks for the opportunity to join you.
Now, Jordan, we're doing this via Zoom, obviously. Tell us where you are.
So I am currently standing in my office in Savannah, Georgia. I am the chaplain for 1st Ranger Battalion within the military community. And so we have trekked all across the country. I've had a child born in 3 different time zones, and I now find myself in the South, in Georgia, with my family. So
you're a Manhattan native, I guess it's safe to say?
Indeed, yeah. I definitely call Manhattan home on a regular basis. So.
Well, you've got quite a story to share from a lot of different perspectives, and then we also have the military perspective. You deal with a lot of stuff that people don't really want to talk about and don't know how to deal with.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. You know, as a chaplain, the privilege and confidential communication that we are afforded is really unique in the context and the landscape of counseling and support. Really, anyone can come and talk with us about anything. And so we tend to be the first stop and the last stop for a lot of folks who are seeking help. You get to meet people in some really intimate and valley and mountaintop moments of life. That's a privilege to walk alongside them as a pastor and a chaplain. So it's definitely unique work that is a joy and a privilege.
What drew you into becoming a pastor?
We're going to dive right into my story very quickly with this one. For me, you know, as many know from our community, in 2005, after I had graduated high school and I was in school at Kansas State University, my high school sweetheart, who was from the community there, Brianna Reed, who was attending college at the University of Nebraska-Lincoln, on her way back up to school after a little bit of a snowstorm, she hit some black ice and was killed in a car accident on a Monday morning. My life went from extremely predictable and I thought I had everything worked out and knew what my path looked like to completely upended, lost, and in a pretty dark place. And so for me, the experience of grieving, the experience of, frankly, not wanting to continue living at times, the experience of just being in a really dark place also was an experience that brought an entire community, and in particular from the church community around me. They loved me in ways that I never imagined other humans could love someone in just complete selflessness. I was the benefactor of the arms of a community in some pretty incredible ways that carried not only from, you know, my time in Manhattan. I ended up dropping out of college at K-State. I moved to California. I was greeted with open arms by a church in California while I was working as a roofer in Central Valley, California for a while in the Modesto area. That carried on to going back to school in Southern California at UCLA to finish my undergraduate degree. I was welcomed with open arms and loved by a church all the while with the community's arms wrapped around me. A lot of healing was occurring and happening for me. And so as I was finishing school and looking ahead, discerning what was next for me. I was just gripped by and so had been so transformed by the love of a community and those who walked alongside me through my journey that I couldn't really see myself doing anything else other than giving back in the ways that people had given to me. And so it was a very natural progression for me to move into pastoral ministry and started seminary and was working at some churches in the local community. And then my athletic background and love for the outdoors and all things kind of collided when I decided I'd be a pastor with this crazy community called the Army and be outside and on the go with them. And it's been an honor and a joy. It's been some hard days and some challenging days, but some pretty beautiful and amazing days as well. So in a nutshell and diving in real quick, that definitely is kind of shapes my journey to pastoral ministry and to Army chaplaincy.
Jordan, what was it like when you were in college and in Brianna's passing? Did you have a support group? Did you feel free that you could talk to others about that?
Yeah, that's a great question. You know, there's no playbook for how to grieve. Especially when you're not expecting it in any way, shape, or form. So I was fortunate in many ways by the grace of God to have been plugged into a church community at that time. I was connected with some of the college ministry stuff that was going on at University Christian Church there in the community. Chris Harrington, who's a name that many will remember, was there at the time. And when Brianna died, I was shook. It wasn't even real to me, frankly. And I remember living, you know, at the same time, my parents being in the same town, they were the ones that showed up and broke the news to me. But it really wasn't real until we had driven over to the Reed's residence on the other side of town. Brian Reed, who is an Army chaplain, actually was deployed at the time. So he was actually in Iraq, which was its own layer of trauma in the whole situation. But the moment that Faye opened the door to her home was the moment it was real to me. And that hug is one I will never forget. And I felt so broken. And then I turned around and lo and behold, the next person that I saw was Chris Harrington, you know, pulling up at the Reed's house. And so right away, the church got its arms around me. I didn't know what to do next. So I actually was plugged into, like I said, a small group at the time. That night, I think it was, I actually went to the small group because I didn't know what to do or where to go. And I thought, well, maybe I'm just supposed to do the next thing that I was going to do. And so I ended up going to small group that night. The guys that were there didn't, I don't think at the time, I mean, this is before, like, you know, group chats and stuff. So I don't think half of them knew what was going on with me at the time, frankly. They just showed up to study the Bible and all of a sudden they were met with my grief and probably overwhelmed a bit. I have since reflected on that experience and I had no idea at the time how much I needed them to be there that night for me. I didn't ask them to show up. I didn't expect them to be there. But I am forever indebted to the young men that were all there in the room that night, because it went from a Bible study to a love Jordan session real quick. And Chris was amazing. And those guys, I'm still in touch with many of them, are incredible. And I'm so thankful for them, because that group of guys and that network within that church kept me living, frankly, kept me from day to day reminding me that there was still goodness in this world and the sun still comes up, even though you can't see anything because it just feels all too dark. So
that's great to hear. I know in all the different podcasts we've done and spoken with so many people, I tended to go the opposite way. I didn't want anybody coming near me. I wanted my own little bubble, you know, that I'm in. And so it took me 10 years to realize that you can't be in a bubble. You know, you have to have that support team. You can't be afraid to ask for help. And that's one thing that we're a part of, the Yellow Ribbon Suicide Prevention Program. And that's the theme of that. It's okay to ask for help. And that's one of the things through this series that I'm kind of wanting to get out. I've learned myself the hard way that you do have to ask for help and it's okay.
Absolutely. And I think one of the big takeaways that I had from that experience, and one of the things that has certainly shaped and influenced my ministry as a pastor, is I was just fortunate, frankly. I was plugged in and connected enough at the time that carried me through. It has certainly shaped and influenced the way that I've gone about ministry, in the sense that trying to get people connected, because you just never know what's going to happen tomorrow. And we tend to be a pretty consumeristic society in a lot of ways. And so it's really easy to sort of step back from a potential, you know, dinner or gathering or event or church or whatever it might be and say, like, oh, you know, I don't know if I'm feeling it today. You know, maybe I've got some other things that I would rather be plugged into, or I've got something else that's important. I've got to clean my, whatever it might be, right? But the truth is that there's no greater investment of our time than those relationships around us, because you never know what's going to happen tomorrow. And you never know what's going to happen in your own life, but also the gift that we bring to others when we show up. Just like those guys, they had no idea what was going on with me, but I needed them there, and they were continue to be, you know, an incredible gift to me. And so I think certainly not only asking for help when things are hard, but asking for help far before things are hard, in sort of a preventative way, setting up rhythms of life and patterns of life where you're connected and authentic and yourself, the people know you and you know other people, that allows you to respond to life's highest of highs, frankly, and lowest of lows, with little to no thought, because frankly, you and I both know, like, there's not much thought that goes into responding to a traumatic event. You just do, because there's nothing, you don't have any brain power left after the grieving.
The Suicide Awareness Pact podcast continues. It's funded in part by the Kansas Health Foundation, AmeriCorps Seniors, and the Greater Manhattan Community Foundation. I'm Dave Lewis. Lori Bishop is here in the studio and via Zoom from Savannah, Georgia. We have Chaplain Jordan Henricks joining us to tell his story about some challenges in dealing with grieving and the loss of a loved one. And Jordan, I suppose that those experiences not only led you into the ministry, but I bet you have a powerful testimony to tell some of the soldiers that come to you when they are in their time of need.
Absolutely. That has influenced and been such an impactful opportunity that I've had to connect with young people who are going through hard situations. You know, everybody has their own unique experiences of trauma, of hardship, of different, you know, painful experiences in life. And it's really easy to compare what you're going through to what someone else is going through. And it's really easy to sometimes have pity on someone or have sympathy for someone, but without really being able to have empathy for them and being able to put yourself in their shoes. And I think one of the things that I have experienced as a result of going through hard things is, as I have young people, old people like that are experiencing hardship in different ways, you're able to really meet them where they are and listen to them and validate their experiences and not try to, you know, put the rose colored glasses on and make them just feel better when you walk out. Because when you've been through hard things that have changed your life, there's a sense in which you realize, like, it's okay to feel terrible. It's okay to have days on end where you just don't want to get out of bed. That's okay. There's a quote from a book. Johann Hari wrote this book called Lost Connections. And I love this quote. He says, what if depression is in fact a form of grief for our own lives not being as they should? What if it's a form of grief for the connections we have lost yet still need? And I think that's so true, because what makes us grieve is the lost connections that we experience with people we love and through different things that happen in life. And it's okay to feel that. We're quick to say there's something wrong with you when you're down and in the dumps. But I think as a chaplain, I enjoy meeting people where they're at and validating those experiences and letting them feel what they're feeling, letting them process those things without trying to help them feel better when they walk out. Because sometimes feeling like yourself and feeling what you're feeling actually is what feels best.
When my son Shane passed away, I remember calling my youngest son Grant. He was stationed at Warren Air Force Base, and I was just not into it at the time, trying to explain to him what had happened. And you know, to this day, almost 13 years later, I can still hear the little cry, you know, in his voice. And you know, it's just hard. You know, you're not prepared to lose a child. You know, and you don't know how to respond. You just respond just how it comes out.
That's exactly right. One of the things that comes to mind in the context of pain and hardship today, one of the phenomenons that we've seen more and more, especially with young people, that is hard, is when people are experiencing deep emotional pain, there is oftentimes some symptoms that present themselves on the surface, you know, danger seeking activities, some of these things that don't make rational sense. You sort of say to yourself, like, why would you do that? Like, why are you hurting yourself? Don't do that, you know? But I think one of the things that I experienced and that I've seen a lot of young people is being able to validate those things, because there's so much pain going on inside. It's a weird phenomenon when everything that hurts, no one else can see. And so sometimes there's a sense in which I want to feel on the outside what I feel on the inside. You know, being able to meet, you know, someone who is cutting or you know, doing stupid danger seeking acts or whatever it might be, being able to say like, I can appreciate why you're doing that. You know, you feel so much pain on the inside that it just makes sense. You almost want it on the outside to feel normal again. And every time that I have been able to meet people in those moments and validate those experiences, there's just this sense of relief that they experience of, yes, that's it. And they don't feel crazy and they don't feel like they, you know, that, that they're beyond hope and beyond repair, which we sometimes do. And we invalidate people in those moments. We make them feel that way. And that has been, I think, really transformative to meet people in those moments and experience that sense of relief. And it's healing to me too. You know, there's Henri Nouwen wrote a book called The Wounded Healer. And I feel every day, like, thanks to my own healing and my own healing journey, I get the opportunity to walk alongside others. But there's a little bit of healing that I do each time as well, frankly. So
I know one of the things, Jordan, is that you eventually, at some point, were able to find love again. And life does go on. Maybe not the track that we thought it would be going, but it does.
It's a hard thing because you have to let people grieve in their own time and on their you know, their own ways of expression. And I will share that, you know, some of the most painful things that I have heard in my life came from really well-meaning, well-intentioned people who wanted to make me feel better and who just said some things that hit me the wrong way and frankly set me back quite a bit in my grief. For me, and this is, you know, everyone experiences things differently. For me, one of the biggest hurdles to overcome was I believed a lie for a long time that my singleness was connected to Brianna's legacy, that others would forget Brianna if I was in a relationship. And so as long as I was single, no one would forget her. That took a long time to work through. And frankly, the Reed family, Brian and Faye and Gabe and Grant were immensely supportive in that. And there was a lot of conversations with friends. You know, shout out to all the hours and hours of walks and talks and time spent from Scott and Ian and Nathan and Chris and Tim and the amazing people that walked alongside me and loved me. But as I continued to heal and continue to understand that life continues moving forward, I'm not moving on. I'm just moving forward. It made for some interesting conversations. You know, Brittany and I, my wife, were friends for probably 2 years before we started dating. I was not in a place to be in a relationship at all when we were, you know, first met. And that was for part of our initial conversations was, you know, my grief and Brianna and the fact that, you know, that my love for her and memory of her will always remain. You know, there were some unique conversations and it's been a unique road, but we've walked it together. Brittany is amazing, amazing teammate, friend. She is truly, truly a gift from God and is an amazing wife. But it has included some interesting turns that a lot of people have asked, like, how do you do that? Or how does that make sense? One example, many people have said, that's crazy. I actually proposed to Brittany on the anniversary of Brianna's death. And so on November 28th, the day that Brianna died, was also the day that I asked Brittany to marry me. In typical Jordan fashion where I'm overthinking everything, right? I thought to myself, I don't want there to be a day on the calendar that's not ours. And there's no sacred cows in our marriage, you know? And that meant everything to Brittany because of all the conversations and the journey that we had walked through. But we have had some interesting, you know, glances after we've shared that with people of like, how does that make sense? You know, it doesn't, frankly. Grief doesn't make sense all the time. But as long as you're grieving with people and you've got a community that you're connected to through the process and an amazing partner like Brittany, it works out and you keep moving forward. So
yeah, and you made a good point, and we've been talking about that a lot. Is like not moving on, moving forward, and we've talked about that. But I want to switch over a little bit towards what you do with the Army. We had a gentleman on that talked about the statistics of 22 soldiers a day dying by suicide, and I know those numbers fluctuate a lot. With what you're doing there and in Savannah and at the Army, are you seeing a significant number that are dying by suicide or having those suicidal thoughts?
it tends to be pretty consistent with the civilian population within the military community. However, we have seen the last couple of years, the civilian population, actually, interestingly enough, in times of COVID and other things, have actually taken a little bit of a dip in suicide numbers, and the military population has actually not taken that dip. And so there's been a unique break in statistics that actually make you kind of raise your eyebrows. What's going on different here? And I do think the transient nature of the military, the continued, you know, move from place to place and lack of connectedness and lack of community, you can find it, you can make it, but it's more work and it's harder. One of the things the military is attempting to do on a regular basis is make the lifestyle of the military more conducive to working, you know, dual working couples. And that's one of the things that adds a lot of stress to families too. And so I think that all those things layered on top of 20 years of war and a lot of combat experience and a lot of trauma are certainly a recipe for someone being in a place where they feel so isolated and so alone and so hopeless that there's no other way out. Typically speaking, what we see is suicidal ideation, and suicide is connected to, you know, a lot of different risk factors that often include broken relationships, frankly. Substance is often a part of that, which has its own, you know, relational nature to it. You know, we turn to relationships we can control. Substances are a relationship we can control. In the absence of control in the relationships we can't control, like our marriages or our friendships. So we are certainly seeing that trend continue. This is where I am incredibly drawn to my work as a pastor, as a chaplain, because Gallup has done some great research as well to show really a correlation between religious engagement and connection with religious communities, an inverse trend in anxiety and depression and an upward tick in some of these things. And you could argue that, you know, that is theological in nature, and it's the disconnection from God and this and that. I certainly, as a pastor, you know, agree with some of those things. But I think on a sociological level, too, religious communities have always offered a sense of community, a sense of belonging, a sense of connectedness. And as we see a decrease in religious engagement and religious attendance, we're also seeing a disconnection from community that I think has really significant impacts. And so one of the things that we're continuing to try to do here at Hunter Army Airfield in Savannah with folks is really try to encourage people, hey, you know, connect. Doesn't matter what your worldview is, whether you are, you know, religious, whether you're Christian or Jew, connect, you know, Muslim, connect with those communities, whether you're humanist, you know, connected with volunteering community, whatever it might be, whatever your worldview is and your background is, there's people that share that. And we need to share that with one another, because that is truly what is going to help us sociologically as a community to be healthier and whole. I think one of the ways that we're seeing an uptick in connectedness and community is in the fitness world. You know, CrossFit gyms and places like Eat the Frog there in Manhattan and other things have certainly gotten a lot of attention recently, because there's a sense of belonging and connectedness as you go and share this experience with other people. Obviously, as a pastor, I think one thing, I have a, you know, strong sense in one direction, but I think what's most important, if I can just step back and take my pastor hat off for a second, is that people are plugged into local community and connected, because that truly, I think, corresponds to, and we'll see differentiation in some of those trends towards suicidal ideation, suicide, depression, anxiety, and if we are getting connected and plugged into our communities.
Yeah, you know, and that's interesting, because Fort Riley, I think General Sims started that wellness program, and I had spoken with him once at a luncheon, and he said that he tied in and is encouraging them to volunteer, and it's amazing within a 1 year time frame the number of soldiers at Fort Riley that have reached out. We placed 90 alone just for an event tomorrow. And we're talking probably 300, 400, 500 that in a year's time. And so I'm glad to see that. But I do have a question for you as a pastor. We had a podcast on that just aired, a mother talking about losing her son. She got asked about, did your son go to heaven or did your son go to hell? I heard the same thing. How would you respond to somebody that asks you that question?
It is a difficult question. And we are, in moments, especially in moments of grief and hardship, We are searching for answers, and we are looking to try to solve the puzzle of what happened and what's going to happen next. And I think it goes back to that feeling of being completely out of control. There is not a consensus from the theological community, no matter your faith tradition, on, you know, what happens in the wake of suicide, what happens in the context of someone who dies by suicide. And I think that the most important takeaway as we respond as pastors, as we respond as a community, life is precious. I believe we are created in the image of God, and that makes life worth living. That makes life truly incredible. Just taking a breath is incredible. And in addition to the sanctity of human life, when a person dies by suicide, when a person dies, period, it breaks God's heart. I mean, there is nothing joyful about a person's death. You know, one of the things that I think we've seen as well is an uptick in a move away from sort of a funeral setting to sort of a celebratory setting when someone dies, because we long to put a positive spin on hard things that happen. But I think I think we can go too far in that too. Sometimes it's okay just to hurt. Sometimes it's okay just to be sad. Sometimes it's okay to not know and to not have an answer. Sometimes it's okay to meet someone in their questions and say, you know what? I don't know. But what I do know is that I'm sad. And what I do know is that this isn't God's best. This isn't what we're created for. And so we'll respond as best we can. And we'll figure out all the answers to all the questions one day. But the truth is, whether I know or I don't know, I still have to keep going forward somehow. So having an answer from someone who actually doesn't know the answer, you know, there's really only one who knows the answer anyway. And at the end of the day, we love each other and move forward as best we can and try to validate our experiences with one another, I think so.
That's a terrific way to end our visit here today. Chaplain Henriques, thank you so much for sharing your story. I know that considering that was 17 years ago that your life changed, about the same time mine did with the passing of my wife, and how we continue to take those experiences. And I don't know where I would be without faith or without community, the people that reach out. Lori can say the same.
Yeah, that's right.
It's one of those things that we just need to be able to embrace. And sometimes it's hard to do that, but it's one of the greatest gifts that we are given, is that sense of community and that faith through Him that we are able to forge on and continue to live the life that He and the rest of us feel like we deserve.
Yeah, it's so well said. Yeah. Thank you for inviting me to be a part of this podcast. And thank you for the work and the ministry that you guys are engaged in. I mean, creating shared language and shared understanding around grief and loss is so important. And I'm so thankful for what you're doing.
Like I said, that was the one thing I wanted to accomplish from doing all of this. We're not professionals by any means, and I didn't want to go that route. I wanted to go more with, we tell our stories and we hear that, you know, that human feeling, that human touch. And interestingly enough, I think we've done 5 of these so far. All 5 seem to be very similar in what their thoughts and their processes are. And so that's really kind of cool to see that happen.
Chaplain, thank you so much for joining us today. God bless you. Thanks for your work in the service.
Thanks again.
Thank you.
God bless you guys. Thank you so much.
We hope you or someone you love can benefit from this series. If you need help, reach out to the many resources that are available. Many are listed in our show notes. The Flint Hills Volunteer Center's Suicide Awareness Pact podcast series is funded in part by the Kansas Health Foundation, AmeriCorps Seniors, and the Greater Manhattan Community Foundation. Please follow us wherever you get your podcasts and share them with those you know that are seeking help and hope.